Welcome to Speech Sounds from Hush Harbor Press. You've joined us for episode 5, How to Write a Sonic Story. If you've been listening for the last 5 episodes, you've heard Spoken Words, Black Origins, Queer, Gifted, and Black, Honoring Our Auntie's Audio, and Celebrating Black Sound. All iterations of what we are calling at Hush Harbor Press, Sonic Stories. As publishers, why are we interested in sound? In publishing stories that are not contained by the page? We're going to explore that with you today. And when the time comes, we'll be asking for submissions of sonic stories. So we begin here speaking with our artists on process. How do you create? Where do you begin? We sit down with the founders of Hush Harbor to discuss their definition of sonic storytelling, what they are excited to see and to publish, and we hear from each of the lead artists of the last 5 episodes. Malaika, the Moonrise Poet, Nazra, Myrtle Henry Sodi, Tuku Matthews, and Jamila Malika Abu Bakari, on what sonic storytelling means to them. We begin today by wandering through the wilderness of sound and process with Jamila Malika Abu Bakari and the ever-changing audio piece, Meta Black Cheer 2.
Hi, I'm Jamila Malika Abu Bakari, and I'm a writer and an artist, and I tend to make a lot of sound art. When it comes to sound art, I'm really adamant that people who are often failed by visuality, that those folks who are othered and get shitty representation, people who suffer poor representation, all of us are well served by sound art, I believe. Sound is like code in these ways. I think it sends people into their body and takes them to memories and will later remind them of things, and it sticks. The sound works that I have done and think about doing all have Black women mostly speaking. I think there's something cool that you access outside of white supremacy when you do sound. So, Meta Black Cheer is a collection of pieces that are all Black people cheering on Black up people. Black cheerleaders, Black gymnasts, strollers. It's like a Black fraternity culture. And even some Black guys doing a wave check, checking under each other's do-rags. I put these all together in one piece, and it's meant to boost your mood. Making is dedication, and that's always what I'm trying to do. Meta Black Cheer 1 and Meta Black Cheer 2 are probably the beginning of 3, 4, 5, I like to think of the work as open-ended and ongoing in a process. So I think that if you are an artist, you can rest assured it's okay to kind of keep doing the same thing. You don't have to keep coming up with new things. New things come up as you go back to this thing that you are exploring and focused on. And it's cool to obsess positively.
Yeah! strong.
Period. All of that. All of that.
Gorgeous.
I like your heart, B. You got heart, B. You got heart, B. You got real heart.
This is gonna be crazy.
Yes, sir. This is what I love. That's impressive.
Congratulations, bitch. Like, we've been through it. And you fucking made it, girl. You made it. Congratulations. 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 Congratulations.
I love that. It's impossible to not, like, respond to that and just feel, like, so good and so warm. And it feels like the piece draws straight from a lineage of black sound and joy. When you were creating Meta Black Cheer 2, how did you decide which sounds you were going to pull into it? How you were going to layer them?
Meta Black Cheer I made in a really sad winter. Sometimes these works are just like me self-soothing. And so I'm choosing sounds like if there's like that much sound in... Then there's like so much sound in the clapping and cheering and yelling and kind of rhythmic hyping up who we see that you find in Meta Black Cheer. I'm always looking at like found video, YouTube clips and whatever like Instagram accounts have like black people being awesome. So I have all of these collections of archives of different videos and audios of black people. And some are my friends and family that I've asked them to speak on things. And some are videos I find online. And because of my fascination with cheerleaders, black cheerleaders and gymnasts, their leaps and bounds. I love cheerleaders and gymnasts. In the video work, How High, I'm actually trying to think about what it means to speak. So I pair that gymnast with videos of black women standing up in the audience in a Maury Povich episode. The way that the Maury Povich attendees, these women in the audience, these beautiful black women with beautiful clothes and hair and makeup and no makeup and gorgeousness. They're standing up because they're mad about what the person, the guest is speaking, is on about. And they stand up in this way where it's like, that's how hard it is to get up in the classroom and defend something or to speak up at your workplace or like in a public exchange where somebody is being rude with you to like actually be like, actually, no, I won't accept whatever disrespect. So I feel like, yeah, for me, the videos of cheerleaders and gymnasts and performers, I think there's a lot of ways we all just like perform and can relate to that.
With all those collections of sounds When does an idea for a piece like this bloom and unfurl into something bigger?
Sometimes I just hear a clip and I'm like, oh, that goes with this bunch of pieces that I have. And these people are all following this kind of theme. Listen to Black Women is a piece that has, the second work has Azalea Banks and Angela Davis and Rihanna and Amara La Negra and Kiki Palmer and Julie Black. In Listen to Black Women, one of the things that I pick up is the sound of that little tisk sound. And yeah, just all that is so much energy is wrapped up in that sound, however it's delivered. And then, you know, just thinking about what I want people to hear, I just would hear these interviews or speeches and be like, oh, that's for this. And then I sit with all those files. I drop them all into Pro Tools and I play them and I order them and I reorder them. And then I cut up small pieces very carefully, like really gently. It's really hard sometimes. And then I put those kind of together in different, many different variations. And I try to do it every day for like a little period of time, a couple weeks. And something happens. So you practice, you just do repetition. You just do it over and over and over. And something comes out of that time that you spend with it. Like little, I feel like little stitches or like just a little kind of, it's craft in a way.
I was going through your SoundCloud and in a lot of the pieces, it feels like the clips are in conversation with each other. It feels like you have these different aspects of Black voices around you, speaking with one another, and I was wondering how intentional that interplay is, or if that's something more innate that just comes through the process.
You know what Octavia E. Butler wrote about a positive obsession? I think I'm stuck on certain themes, and I think that's really okay. I think that's what a person does in an art practice. If I think about Simone Yvette Lee is a ceramicist, and she casts and recasts a watermelon. And she makes them all these different things, like busts or like vases. So I just think about these works as just spending time doing, working with what really interests me and what I would like to say. Or express. I think I just really make what makes me happy.
I can definitely see that. All the clips and bites that you've mentioned so far just make you light up when you talk about them. And I love that this is what you're drawn to, these reiterations and a repeating sounds of encouragement.
I hope there's like a loop effect when people hear my work that they remember it in these ways. I think everyone really has a perspective and an eye and an ear, and they can, you know, they have a contribution. I ask my friends and family for, I often ask them like, hey, will you record yourself talking about this? And then I'm gonna use it. Okay? Yeah, and they're like, okay. And I just am so grateful for them for trusting me.
Do you have a specific way you like your work to be consumed, or do you like to leave it up to the listener?
Earphones are really, have a different impact than like open air sound. In a meeting the other day, this person was like, I listened to this here, it was amazing. I'm just happy when people play it. I know on this site that I curated, Oral Alterities, which we'll also link, I say please listen on headphones if possible. I can't be too serious about it. People play it how they want, and that's for them to do.
Thank you so much, Jamila. Please let us know where we can find more of your work.
JamilaMalika@gmail.com. Jamila Malika on Instagram. Like, yeah, you can find me. I don't post too much on Insta, but if I have like an art thing, I put it in my story.
Thank you, Jamila Malika Abu Bakari. Please search out and find more of Jamila's work at Hush Harbor Press as well. So we return again to the question, why Sonic Stories? Why are we trying to make room for sound and oral storytelling in traditional publishing? Why are we interested in publishing beyond the page? Here we speak to Hush Harbor co-founders Alena Johnson and Whitney French on what is driving them to make room for alternate forms of publishing, distinguishing sonic publishing from audiobooks, and the important relationship between blackness and sound.
Yeah, in my mind and in my brain and in my vision, I feel like sonic stories have been happening for so long. We're just giving it a different title. And the way that I think about Hush Harbor, like, we are in the business of publishing black stories, which include written stories and oral stories, and a sonic story is definitely the latter. A sonic story is a space for oral storytelling tradition. It's a space for sound to be the conduit for narrative. It is a space of expression and voice and dialect and room for story to manifest beyond the written word. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's more, but that's just like,
yeah,
first instinct, impulse.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. I think when we started to conceptualize this idea, you know, it took on many different visions and ideals, but mostly we wanted that extra spice to be captured within purporting stories forward. And so, you know, the audio aspects allows for, as you said, the dialect, the you know, the extra spice on, you know, particular words or particular phrases that you want to amplify. It just allows for stories to be purported with like agency and with intentionality, and it just lives more multidimensionally than on a page.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, you're, I like what you're talking about, like words exploring in living in these spaces, but also like the nonverbal creates stories too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and black folks, we have so many nonverbal languages and nonverbal cues and ways of communicating with each other. Like, yeah, that cannot, like many great writers and wordsmiths have captured some nuances of those things, but you gotta just hear it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And the way that I'm thinking about sonic stories, I think you were mentioning earlier, Alena, was it to differentiate it from an audiobook.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of an audiobook is that there was a physical book first, and then as a way to transform the story, you turn it into like an audio expression based off of that book to begin with. Whereas a sonic story, in my mind, or perhaps hopefully in both of our collective minds and our visioning, is that a sonic story is a story that may not be able to be told as a book or through the written word. And there does need to be a precursor.
Right. It's not a linear thing that we're trying to capture here.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that this came about because I remember distinctively you and I, Whitney, we were sharing stories about our particular upbringings and just being West Indian, and sound was such a, sound is the story in many contexts, right? Like just remembering certain sounds and visuals that, you know, again, the written word doesn't afford you all of the extra layers and all that good stuff that really brings the stories alive. And so I think that, you know, working with all these brilliant creatives and just bringing in those extra layers and capturing them in a particular way is like the work that we always set out to do, you know? It's like making this more expansive, making this, you know, a place where we can capture and unearth and, you know, really combat the erasure that we face within Black life.
Yeah.
And take back that agency that we've always had, but also create something beyond you know, what an industry says it ought to be.
As a press, what is Hush Harbor looking for by way of Sonic Stories? So we'll begin with sharing what we're not looking for. Right now, we're not looking for children's literature, picture books, academic text, self-help books, how-to guides, or religious texts. We are, however, very fascinated by Afrofuturism, Black future work, short fiction, Black speculative works, African and Caribbean poetry, and narratives from the experiences of those who are self-identified Black folks and the intersections of Blackness. These themes, so many, are the stories that we are hungry for yet rarely see. So we encourage you to share only your very best stories. Specifically for Sonic Stories, we encourage you to think about the sonic diversity within you, within your communities, and the ones that bubble outside of the page. Definitely want to encourage folks to consider experimental work, nonverbal expressions, and straight up, just some weird things. If there's anything with any of these episodes that resonate and are an extension of these conversations and themes and narratives, please submit to Hush Harbor.
Nonfiction, poetry, sound layering, feet stomping, teeth kissing, laughter, water, tradition meets digital expression, at granny's knee, the stoop, inheritance. What does a sonic story mean to you?
What is a sonic story? A sonic story is an otherworldly espousal of ancestral whispers and murmurings of abolitionist ways of knowing, being, and doing. An aural beacon of luminous soundscapes lathered in stardust, birthed from our collective supernovas.
Sonic stories are about the backstory. They're about giving that other layer to storytelling. Really drawing us in to the layers. Like right now I'm talking and there's cars in the distance, birds in the distance, the trees, all the other noises that accompany living through and with a story. It helps to locate yourself. It helps to locate the other parts of the story that are sometimes hidden.
Sound is a haptic encounter. That's the word that Tina Kamt, Black feminist scholar, uses. It's all about vibration and contact. Nikita Gale, sound artist, talks about sound as being touch and feeling. That's what we tap into when we tap into sonic story.
What is a sonic story? Melodic archive. Ancestral lullaby. Freedom song. Somatic soul. Sound magic. A telling that requires listening to be received. What is heard?
A sonic story to me is the truest form of a story, an embodiment that recognizes the reality that we so much is communicating at the same time, that we are vibrations vibrating, and that's just the facts.
Thank you for listening to episode 5 of Speech Sounds. We've enjoyed sharing space with you over the last 5 episodes. We hope that you will return to previous episodes to meditate on sound, to create and converse. Speech Sounds is an audio series featuring sound artists, griots, and storytellers from the African diaspora and presented by Hush Harbor Press. the only Black queer feminist press in Canada. Speech Sounds is produced by Zainame Gazahe. Our host is Lou Palmer. This episode was written by T.K. Matunda. Research support by Blessing Wodo and Adesina Brown. For more information about our feature artists, please visit hushharbor.com/speechsounds. Until next time.